Garner Ted Armstrong.
Slightly will oscillate between two widely different points. The one, gloom and doom and absolute hopelessness, and the other, a sort of a glittering Disneyland enjoyed by the few while the many starve silently and quietly. And neither of these two make sense. If you were able to walk right on out into the age beyond and to really know what is going to occur in the next 5, 10, and 15 years, what would you say? What kind of a world would it be? What does the world need? What is its greatest single need above any other single thing you can think of? Almost with one voice, people would say world peace. However they might express it, troops come home from Vietnam, total disarmament achieved, and into the population explosion, drought and famine, no more. You might read the headline that the troops in Vietnam are coming home. The chances are the very next headline would be, war erupts in the Congo, or war erupts in the Middle East, or war in Panama, or war somewhere else. Have you ever analyzed the tremendous problems of mankind and faced them squarely and then asked yourself, what is the only alternative? You know, believe it or not, most people simply won't look at today's world news because they're fearful about tomorrow's. They will not analyze critically and in the cold light of day, the clear facts about the way human beings are living today and just the overall trends of human society in general. And they will not do this, and they will not admit facts are facts simply because they are fearful about the world tomorrow, scared of it, frightened of it, afraid it's not going to even come, worried whether there will be a world tomorrow. And so they won't look at the world today. Well, it's about time you realize there is some good news, that there is an age beyond, that there is a master plan that exists for peace, and there is one overall great news source that dares to walk into the age beyond and to tell you the good news that is going to come in spite of humankind, and that is a major news source that most people have overlooked. It's tomorrow's news today. It's news written in advance. Prognostications about the future society, about vast agrarian and government reform. Vast economic reforms, world disarmament conference, and how disarmament is finally achieved. Now, to put it in simple terms, if that's possible in such a vast subject, almost all educators, historians, government leaders, military leaders, and the like admit, as if with one voice, as I've said in a series of programs on the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like, they admit, as if with one voice, as I have repeated, that world government is the greatest single need, that this is the solution. What we need, and that most urgently, said Dr. Charles E. Osgood, is world government. Sir Winston Churchill said a world super government is the only solution to man's ills. And that world government would then have to have the power of a world police force to enforce its laws. What about the world peace through law movement? And how people have addressed that great movement in talking about proposals for peace and human progress through law. But that means one universal law to which all nations and societies, religions, and racial groups adhere. It means a policing agency to apprehend any perpetrators of violence, any potential warmongers, any people who break that overall world law, and then to effect certain punishments that make it absolutely ill-advisable for anyone else to break that law in the future. And how are you ever going to achieve such a world government as this unless each individual nation is willing to give up its own private sovereignty? Unless a nation, collectively, is able to act like an individual. An individual must give up his personal liberties, at least to a degree. Now, I mean by that, that while he is still a free moral agent, he nevertheless must give up personal sovereignty. He cannot be an anarchist. He cannot do what he wants to do when he gets ready to do it without expecting some type of a penalty if he's apprehended. Now, we have great freedoms in the United States, in Australia, in South Africa, in Canada, Great Britain, many other countries of Northwestern Europe. Not all nations enjoy those freedoms. A person in the United States who wants to travel from hither to yon can simply pick up and go without asking anyone. And it's a tremendous blessing that he ought to appreciate. In passing over state lines and using any type of travel, he doesn't have to ask anyone's permission or get any type of a visa or any permission from the government. He simply goes. If a family wants to move from Arkansas to Kansas, they simply pick up and go. And that's a tremendous privilege. If somebody on the courthouse steps to the barber chair wants to speak his mind, he does it. If he wants a .22 caliber rifle in his closet, he has one. If he wants to take his kids and family and pack them in the car and drive out to a national forest and enjoy the birds and the wildlife, he does it. He goes where he wants to go when he gets good and ready to go there, with a few exceptions. He doesn't go where it says no trespassing. He doesn't climb over fences onto government property. He doesn't enter banks after they're closed. And if he does such things, he is then forfeiting some of his personal liberties. That is, if he's caught. Now analyze this like nations, putting nations in the sense of a personal human being who gives up certain of his liberties for the sake of the majority. Unless nations are willing collectively to give up their own personal, private, selfish goals, their dreams of grandeur and of bygone empire, their dreams of world conquest, their ideas of their race or their color or their religion or their national heritage being better than that of other peoples, we will never have peace unless, as the world perhaps leading weekly newspaper or news magazine rather said, unless there is a strong hand from somewhere that would intervene. Now there's the dilemma today. All leaders say we must have world government, and all leaders admit world government today is utterly unfeasible and impossible. Where does that leave you? That leaves you in a sort of a suspended state of wonderment, of doubt, of confusion and frustration. It leaves you with nothing but gloom and doom for the future. Because they tell you the only solution is impossible, therefore there is no solution, therefore the best we can expect, say some, is merely a sort of a staving off of that fateful day of a nuclear bomb World War III in which all human life will perish. Now that's pretty gloomy. So it's about time we heard the good news that these predictions simply are not true. That there's something, someone, that they've left out of the picture. That there is a great news source few people have investigated. Because you see, the alternatives really are quite clear. The question is, meanwhile, what has happened to God? Now, wait a minute, let's face it. There are two alternatives. You might as well realize there are two alternatives. Either there does exist a strong hand from somewhere. Either there is, literally, and you can prove it, a great God who made all of this universe, who made humankind and human nature, and who put man on this earth, and who presently sustains the entirety of the universe, and who is working out a purpose here below. Either there does exist a supreme God and a total power who will intervene in the affairs of the world and save humanity from itself, or else the inevitable will soon occur. Now, if you want to put it in simple terms, that's exactly what you have. Hold it out in two hands and look at it. You've either got an all-wise, all-loving, all-powerful God, as embarrassing as that might seem to a lot of chic, carnal human beings in their vanity, or else we are doomed and we've had it, and humankind is hanging on the gibbet with its eyes bulging, begging, please cut me down. Now, we may do like a lot of people and play kind of ticky-tacky with world events and blind our minds and our eyes from reality and bury ourselves in our own personal problems and pursuits. We might say, oh, come on, I can't see that this world is a bit different than it ever was. It's just better reporting. Why, they probably had murders and crimes and all this kind of garbage back in 1860. You know, you do wonder about the... Isn't it a shame? I was going to say the mental level and the intelligence of some people, but isn't it a shame that stupidity doesn't hurt? You know, if stupidity and addle-headedness and, well, just plain lack of correct thought didn't hurt, if it had symptoms like any other disease, people would seek a cure. But it doesn't. It doesn't give you a blinding headache. And so, of course, many people cling to a lot of completely fanciful and weird notions, a sort of a drawer we label in our mind ready-made excuses for our philosophy of life, our belief, our conduct, and we drag it out and select one at any given time. I have attempted in times past to discuss some of the overall, the really big considerations of the world today, as a lead-in, admittedly, to discussing the possibility of there being a world tomorrow with businessmen. For instance, I have tried to discuss the population explosion. Having heard the statements of the president, the national president of the Chambers of Commerce, and about our high-rise 50-story apartment dwellings of tomorrow's year, and about all our urban renewal and our civic redevelopment and our planning and our broad, fantastic freeways where the minute we cut the ribbon we got a traffic jam, and all of these great plans for the future, if you look at them practically and tangibly and you attempt to delineate specifically and statistically this wonderful world of science, commerce, business, and industry, you come up with the biggest chaotic, smog-filled blob of wretchedness you could begin to take apart and look at. Your mind simply is stultified at even trying to achieve understanding of such a fantastic world as they promise. You can't believe they mean it. And, you know, you can't even discuss it with them. If you start talking about the population explosion, you begin maybe by discussing, for instance, the potential starvation of millions of people in India. You know how far you're going to get? 2 or 3 minutes. And then with a clearing of throat and an excusing of self, we begin to talk about the weather or the latest Hollywood movie or play or notable statement of some notable person who probably is notably notorious for being practically nobody, Mr. What's-His-Name. It's really amazing. Now, in past programs, I have analyzed the population explosion and shown how that is the biggest single problem confronting mankind today, and that if there were no such thing as communism, if we were all olive drab, there were no different races, if we were all of the same language, if we didn't even have any arms, if total disarmament had already been achieved, all of these other gigantic problems totally solved, all one religion, all one language, all one flag, one race, one nation, that even then the population explosion by itself would threaten the very perpetuation of the human race. People just don't want to think about it. They don't want to agree that is a fact. Well, do you want to think about it for a minute? Let's try it. Let's see if you want to think about it just for a minute. Let me just show you some of the succinct, up to the moment, this was New Year's Day, as a matter of fact, so it was fairly recent when this came out. Dr. Harrison Brown, who is Foreign Secretary of the National Academy of Sciences and professor at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, California, was asked in an interview about the population explosion and why it's so much talked about and is it really serious. He was asked to give his opinions from his studious point of view about this fantastic population explosion that you hear of. His answer is about whether it was a really serious danger for the world. He said, very serious, I would say, and I'm quoting his words. It carries all the elements of catastrophe, famine, plague, and major wars. Even here in our own country, we are in for serious trouble. He said Americans living in the year 2000 are going to have a continuous city running down the East Coast, megalopolis, in other words, and another running down the West Coast. He said, I would estimate that by then, the actual physical size of new urban areas on the West Coast alone will come to maybe 15 times the present area of Los Angeles. He said, that scares me. Dr. Brown, you are not alone. That scares the daylights out of anybody. You know, getting away from it all is going to be increasingly difficult because anymore, well, take last summer. A lot of people in California tried to get away from it all to Yosemite. And they had the biggest traffic jam and they had the biggest pileup of humanity up there that you have ever seen in your life. The tent pegs were overlapping. They had so many tents in that valley, and there were so many cars and kids and dogs and people around there, it looked like a Los Angeles parking lot at noonday and the busiest day in July. You have never seen anything like it in all of your life. There was this story about a family who decided to go to the Redwoods. They got into a giant traffic jam south of San Francisco Bay Cities. They were going to stay somewhere in the Oakland area. They had to drive all the way through the city. They drove for hours and hours and hours until they got way north, about 150 miles north of San Francisco. Finally found a motel for like $17 a night. And when they got to the Redwoods, it was nothing but a continual traffic jam. They couldn't believe it. They said, next year, we're going to go home. We're going to pull down our shades, lock our doors and windows, sit in front of the TV set, and go quietly insane. Now, this is very real. It's a real problem, and it's no wonder that Dr. Brown says it scares him. It scares me. It scares anybody. Now, we have students who come from all parts of the world, all parts of the United States, in the three ambassador colleges. And, of course, like a lot of colleges, we always have our share of farm family backgrounds, and we had a number of students who hadn't maybe traveled a great deal and haven't seen an awful lot of human nature, being 18 or 19. And, of course, the annual yearly Rose Parade comes on usually January the 1st, but if that comes on Sunday, nothing is going to interfere with people Sunday. So it comes on a Monday. And anyway, it came on a Monday in 1967, which was actually on the second day of January. And being perhaps one of the chief property owners along the parade route, Ambassador College has a lot of property to watch over, a lot of fences to build, and of course there are stands that are put on the property, and a tremendous avalanche, a kind of a tidal wave of humanity descends in the area, and you can't believe your eyes. And I've already heard many of these students comment they just can't believe it. There's one student in college, and you wouldn't even take him for a college student. He'll hear this program, so I'll apologize in advance. He looks fairly youthful. But that sort of made sense to me. For no reason at all, some of these teenagers walking along pushed the poor kid down. I thought, oh yeah, that makes sense. They push him down. They don't push some of our big 6'6" fellows down. They push him down. He'd be crowding it to make 5 feet tall, I imagine. So they shove him down. That's amazing. But that's the way it is. So they really get their bellies full and their eyes open, so to speak, and looking at it, and looking at this tidal wave of frenzied humanity that will claw over one another to get to see a parade. And then before the parade is halfway over, everybody's saying, well, how long is this stupid thing? When is it over? Because they're disgusted, it's monotonous, and they're already upset by it and wish it would hurry up. It's not quite as thrilling as they thought it would be. You know, there's perhaps no opinion that I could share any more deeply with people than this opinion of feeling that I can't stand a crowd. I just can't. To me, being in the middle of a crowd is about the worst fate that can occur to a human being. I'd rather be sitting on a pinnacle of rock someplace in the middle of a forest watching a blue jay picking on a stump any day than being in the middle of a crowd. I'd almost rather be lost as long as I had a knife and a belt axe and a compass, maybe some warm clothing and some matches. I'd rather be lost in the Selway Wilderness area in Idaho than be down here in the middle of a Rose Bowl or a Rose Parade game, I'll guarantee you. And I think a lot of people share the same view, but you know it's going to be increasingly difficult to become lost anywhere but in a crowd. Now, as a matter of fact, look here, right in front of me, I hadn't noticed this. This was in the U.S. News and World Report, and here I was commenting on it honestly before I even got to it, but in the same answer that Dr. Brown gave, he said, quote, if you go to Yosemite Park, he must have been there, in the summer months, you might as well find yourself in Grand Central Terminal in New York City. I didn't even know that comment was here in front of me. I was talking about an article I'd seen in the newspaper some months earlier. He said, and when you look at today's urban sprawl and the traffic and pollution, just remember that all these problems and others are going to be greatly magnified. Unless we start thinking constructively now, I fear we're going to paint ourselves into a corner. That is, speaking of mankind. Well, he's right. Talk about traffic jams. I know one time it took me over 2 solid hours just to drive from St. Albans into London area, 19 miles north, down into the Swiss Cottage area. And when you drive through Swiss Cottage, you're in a traffic jam. How many of you people living in that area know that, of course? London is nothing but a giant traffic jam with buildings projecting up between the automobiles. And Paris is no better. And a Rome traffic jam, that'll scare the living daylights out of you. I think that one of the most thrilling rides in the world, which pales into insignificance, any roller coaster, anything at Disneyland, any cup and saucer ride in Fantasyland you could ever take, is jumping into a taxi cab in Rome. I think that is the most frightening, the most enervating, the most completely confusing and chaotic experience of anybody's life. So I know it's not worth a ticket just for that one trip, but I'll tell you, you take your life in your hands. It's fantastic. The big cities of the world are big and getting bigger. And Tokyo is no different. Now, Tokyo's got a tremendous smog problem, and cities such as Denver and Phoenix that used to be thought of as health spas have smog problems, and people are dying and dropping dead of tremendous consumptive diseases. It's amazing what's happening, and you know, you ought to discuss it. You ought to look at it. You ought to realize that it's a continual and a building and a gigantic problem that is being faced, at least by some. Now, I don't know the address, but I know that there was a huge ad that was placed in the Wall Street Journal by the Hugh Moore Fund. It was addressed to the President of the United States, and the title of it was Famine Stalks the Earth. And there's a little booklet that the Hugh Moore Fund put out entitled Famine Stalks the Earth. And I'd have to find out what is their address. It's somewhere in New York City, I believe. And, you know, you ought to write for that one as well, as writing for the literature we have for you free of charge. And we can give you articles on the subject if you want to write for it. But it's discussed rather thoroughly in this booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. What will it be like? If you could walk right on out into the age beyond, what would you see? By taking any known trend today, you can't see anything but chaos. You can't see anything but further poverty and sickness and disease and degradation and filth and scum and slime and slop and swill and smog and crowded humanity jammed up together. You can't see anything but increasing divorce and increasing use of hallucinogens and increasing cancer and heart disease and everything of the kind. More wars instead of fewer. That's all you can see. That's all anybody sees. The last program I read to you, the wisest and the best prognostications by the leading weekly news magazine in the United States about the next year and what you can expect in the news was all bad. Now, really, when you come right down to it, there are only two alternatives, and one is absolute doom. Sir Bertrand Russell, the noted British philosopher and historian, thinks that's what's going to happen. Or, you see, a great God who is going to save mankind from himself. That's all you've got left. Now, you may think that it's a lot more involved than that. You might think there are 6 or 8 or 10 alternatives, but you're wrong. When you take them all together, there are only two alternatives. Either someone, somehow, is going to have to step in and interfere in the events and the affairs of this world and save humanity from itself, or else humanity is doomed and there is no other alternative. We have ignored the cause of all that exists. And it goes back to the old song, doing what comes naturally. And by just doing what comes naturally, humankind is about to people itself off the earth, eat itself off the earth, pollute itself off the earth, disease itself off the earth, crime and criminality itself off the earth, blast itself off the earth in warfare, or simply crowd itself off the earth. And today there are at least 3 separate methods by which humankind could obliterate all life: hydrogen and atomic bombs, then the toxic poisons, and then pollution. And you know, we simply don't see any solution for it. Now, there is a solution, and there's a book that I have right before me that gives you the solution, but at least dares to admit what are the two alternatives and then tells you how you can prove that there is some good news beyond after all. And the booklet is entitled The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It gives you the cause of wars. It gives you why we're never going to have this utopian world until human nature is changed. And tells you that leading scientists and philosophers are telling you exactly that this is what they say. Well, that's what the Bible says. That's what Christ said. That is the message of the Bible, that you won't have peace until human nature is changed. What Dr. Robert M. Page said, and I've quoted him for years because it makes so much sense. It's so absolutely true. Until human nature is changed, we shall have wars. But wars are becoming increasingly untenable and unthinkable and impossible, because the more wars you have, the more nations join the atomic club, the more difficult it is even to tell who your enemies are, and the more people are blasted into oblivion by them, and the next one, if and when it ever starts, is liable to be the very last one, and there won't be anybody to even divide up the spoils. Now, nobody is going to wave a magic wand, and this booklet shows you how, just to suddenly command human nature to be different. But there is going to come a metamorphosis. There is going to come a fantastic series of events which is going to change the hearts and minds of a lot of human beings. And those events are spelled out in this booklet. And then what those changes will finally affect, all of this is spelled out in this booklet. It tells you the exact specific changes to come in government. It tells you how all nations are going to submit to that government and give up, believe it or not, their own personal sovereignty and become part of a perfect government. This book, it tells you exactly how total disarmament will be achieved. It tells you how government planning and urban renewal and the freeing up of clogged, crowded old city areas is going to occur. It tells you on the national and the international level the great changes that take place in governments on this earth today. It tells you the great, tremendous reformation in education and also in religion, how there is to come a complete re-educational process, and how the world will finally have one religion and one language. How people have tried to get across that idea for millennia. They try to come up with a new calendar, not one that's based on the petty presumptuousness and the vanity of a couple of ancient rulers of Rome, like Augustus, who thought his month ought to have 31 days for a fellow. So he snatched it away from February, which is impossible, but I mean, he tried to do it anyhow. It's just a matter of hanging the wrong label on it. So Julius, good old Julie, he's got 31 days in his month, and Augustus had to have 31 in his. You talk about vanity. Naming days and lengths of months after a man. Isn't that kind of shameful? And then, of course, here comes old September. That means the seventh month, but it's not. It's the ninth. And then October. That means eighth, but it's not. It's the tenth. And then November. That means ninth, but it's not. It's the 11th. And December. That has to do with tenth. It's not, though. It's not the tenth. It's the 12th. We've even got the month of the year named wrong. We've got our days named after pagan gods. Moon day. And the day of Zeus, and the day of Woden, Wednesday, and the day of Thor, Thursday, and the day of Freya, Freya's day, or Friday, and the day of Saturn, Saturday, and the day of the sun. We're real intellectual, aren't we, and educated. Well, all that paganism is going to be eradicated, and we'll name things the way they are. Now, here's a tabloid-sized newspaper tells you in one article how a lot of people got really enthusiastic and even named one city in Russia Liarsville before it got changed, and that isn't right either. So some of them are going to have different names than they have today. But this tabloid size could be newspaper tells you the good news that is ahead. Here's an article about total disarmament achieved. And this booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like in Full Color, dares to tell you the good news that you will not read anywhere today. It just isn't available anywhere else but here. And write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine while you're at it. It's free of charge, no price. If you write for this booklet, by the title of this radio program, The World Tomorrow, write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. You don't need to request this tabloid newspaper. It's inserted in the booklet. It'll come along automatically by requesting the booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like? It's free. There is no charge, no follow-up, no request for money. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.